I'm here with David Davison at the International Ceramics Workshop, and I have been very lucky these days to have the opportunity to talk to him and to listen to him. So I would ask him just a few questions. Well, first of all, thank you, David.
You're welcome.
Okay. Well, I would like to ask you, because you talked about this quite a lot, about how important nature has been in your life and in your professional career as a visual artist, out of your experiences, your childhood, the materials you use, etc.
So you want to answer this like 3 or 4 hours?
Not shorter than that, 2 minutes.
As an artist, but also as a college professor of over 50 years, you know, the answers are simple and then not so simple always. I think nature has certainly been part of my life since I was a baby. And my understanding of it as a child was enormous, and my commitment to it and my introduction to it and my life around nature and through nature was a way of seeing and a way of understanding the world in a rather profound way. And I started that very young when I was, you know, maybe in the depths of Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts, through being an Eagle Scout when I was 13, because it was a lens to look through. And also a lens that was a psychological, emotional, and spiritual lens that went simultaneously. I never saw nature as art. Nature is nature. It's a miracle. And then it wasn't until perhaps I got older when I saw nature as everything that is related to the universe and the psychology of being a human being or being a living creature. So nature is something I revisit, and I would say I calibrate and recalibrate every year of my life. So, you know, I'm 77, and so in these years, perhaps at these later years, in the last 15 years, I'm in more awe of nature than ever. And nature as phenomenology, nature as a mystery, nature as wonder, nature as something not to worship, but to try to be part of and accept that it is what it is, and to move through that. And perhaps this year's nature connection was seeing, being in New Zealand after being in India, and spending some time looking up at the stars at St. John's Observatory, and the wonder, the rebirth of the wonder of the beginning of the world, only looking at a couple trillion galaxies.
Talking about galaxies, you said something the other day I liked very much. You said sometimes you do something, you create something, and it is a galaxy in itself. When thus an artifact becomes art? Mm-hmm.
Say that again about the artifact becoming art. I think that the idea that initially that nature is what it is, and it has all kinds of people who perhaps don't make art or make art or think of nature as art. I don't, and I never have. I see it as a miracle, and I see it within the miracle of philosophy and spirituality. I think that I want to be more pointed to answer it. So give me the question again.
When does something that a person creates become art, from your point of view?
Well, again, I don't think there's a simple answer to that question. Because when one makes something, most people who make things, whether they make love, or they make dance, or they make gardens, or they make a great souffle, for some people it's art right away. And I would argue it's not always art. And forgive me that urinating can be artful, but it's not art. Sometimes it feels like it's art, but it's not art. I think the art is a very, very complicated and very simple thing. I think it's a union, and it's a union of one's mystery and one's knowledge. And when something collides in that magical space, and the art of dance or writing or putting a man on the moon or whatever it is, that's artful. There's moments when it has a transcendent quality. Two words meeting each other. I would argue, I and thou, or you and me, or you and witness. All of those suddenly change the dynamic. We all share, we share the planet, but we also share an identity that's virtually identical. Yet within that identical genetic pool that we're a part of, and with all of our living creatures, we are unique. That's the piece that I look for in my own work and my own practice, in something that is often intangible, but it's identifiable at times. It changes you.
Mm-hmm. A last question, probably the most difficult and the most personal, is one of the questions you asked in that piece of art or creation that you showed me the other day. What feeds your heart?
I think that's a wonderful question, even though it's my question, but it's not my question, everybody. I don't know many philosophers or writers or artists at some point, thinkers, don't ask that question. It's a thing that people are looking for that they may not articulate. Children ask it all the time, what feeds their heart? They seek it. So I would argue, what feeds my heart is, this is very simple, waking up in the morning. Since I was a little boy, I wake up and I go, oh my God, this is so amazing. No matter what happened the day before, no matter, as I've grown older, no matter what tragedy, what joy I've had the night before, the day before, something in me, and for whatever reason, I see the beginning and an ending. And so the day begins with like, oh my goodness, isn't this amazing? I am awake. If that sounds so simplistic, but it doesn't mean that every day is so joyful. It's not about that. But it is about the creative drive that I've felt most of my life. Mm-hmm. And the creative drive is not about money. It's not about fame. It's all about trying to understand the world, mm-hmm, and finding out these magical things that happen. That other creatures that are much smarter or much more interesting or much more beautiful, like whether it's the creatures of the planet or it's other human beings. That's the piece that I celebrate. So it is celebrating, I guess, the humanity that I share with everyone else.
Well, thank you very much indeed. A total and absolute pleasure to meet you and to talk to you.
My great pleasure. No, thank you for this opportunity to talk with you and to spend these wonderful days together.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.